Thank you, Marcia, for that beautiful prelude. Good morning, everyone. Good morning to this glorious day. And welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I am Ann Lundeen. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and an open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, or family structure. We welcome you no matter what your age or your abilities or inabilities. Toward the end of the service, we invite visitors, guests, and returning friends to introduce themselves so that we may get to know you better. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of services. They are presented either by a Prairie member, a member of the wider community, or by our minister, Ralph Tuzinski. Today, we have our own inimitable Rose Smith to give her annual reading program. Hooray! Our opening words will be read by Rose Smith.
Thank you, Ann. I've traveled the world twice over, met the famous saints and sinners, poets and artists, kings and queens, old stars and hopeful beginners. I've been where no one's been before. I learned secrets from writers and cooks, all with one library ticket to the wonderful world of books. And now we'll sing hymn number 109 in the Prairie Songbook, or you have the song sheet in front of you.
To celebrate in stories.
As we now light the candle, let us consider the following words by Maya Angelou. When I look back, I am so impressed again with the life-giving power of literature. If I were a young person today, trying to gain a sense of myself in the world, I would do that again by reading, just as I did when I was young.
As a caring community, we now take time to briefly share special joys, sorrows, or personal concerns with our prairie friends. Galen will take around the microphone.
And it was not such a joy of doing it in now, a balky, cold spring, very little training, and then comes the heat. So 484 miles, and I made it every inch. There were temptations to get off and walk, and some people did, and good on them, but I made it every inch. So, and then I had the opportunity to listen to Dave talk about pedaling perhaps on the other side of the road. Well, maybe not in certain parts of this Wisconsin. I did notice that a number of our communities do need to apply for that stimulus money for more road building.
Well, first of all, Karen, I want to thank Midgey for the name tags. They look fantastic. And, yeah, we'll show them off to people throughout the day. Also, we want to thank everybody for the baby shower. It really makes us feel like a part of the community, and we've been sharing with a lot of you how much we're looking forward to being parents for the first time. So thanks, everybody, for making us feel so welcome.
Well, my joy is that I can finally see again out of my right eye after this long, long thing of a corneal ulcer. And I also want to thank those of my friends at Prairie who helped me and showed concern and gave me rides when I couldn't drive. Thank you, all of those who know who did that. So that's my joy now.
I spent a week at a Michigan cottage with my daughter from Berkeley and some Ann Arbor friends, and I had either walleye or whitefish every night. It was wonderful, and morning swims with the loon calling. It was marvelous. Unfortunately, my younger daughter, Ginny, had scheduled during this same time. Okay, my younger daughter, Ginny, had scheduled during the same time an operation for cancer underneath, right near her eye and eyelid. And I was very concerned about not being here. But Rosemarie stood in loco parentis and was there to help her, which was wonderful. Thanks.
Well, I am back. This time, my sister's partner of 20-some years had passed away, and I went to be with her and was there for almost 3 weeks and helped her just to be with her to plan the memorial service, which we ended up having at the Unitarian Fellowship in Vancouver, Washington, even though they were not connected with the fellowship. And it was a wonderful celebration of Shirley's life. And we had many family flew out to be with us, and good times together and time to take her to the Oregon beach. So if anybody wants to find out more about death and dying and legal things connected with gay and lesbian partners, I can tell you about Washington State. Domestic partnership helps. They got it 4 days before she died.
About 2 months ago, I got a letter from the IRS saying that they were auditing my 2007 income tax. And then I got another letter saying that on a transaction 12 years ago, they didn't have any record, and I owe them almost $10,000, and with penalties and interest and everything. So I wrote them back, and I said, I don't have anything from 12 years ago. I have no idea. All you can do is trust me. And they sent a letter back and said, we trust you. You don't owe us anything. So I can pay my pledge.
Is this on?
Yeah.
Okay. We have several joys. We were gone for 3 weeks and went to a grandson's wedding and went to visit another grandson. And then last week we were at Isle Royale on an elder hostel. But I have a joy and a concern about our grandson in Colorado. He's 23 years old, and when we went, he is in an alcoholic rehabilitation center, or he was, and when we visited there for a family weekend, he had just celebrated 65 days of sobriety, which is more than he had achieved for the past 5 years, horrible as that sounds. The sorrow, concern rather, is that at the end of his 3 month stay there, he elected to go out on his own. He felt he could do it himself, although his counselors recommended a sustained period in a halfway house. So we're just concerned, and we know we can't change him. We can just love him.
I'm Dan Proud. I'm the new chairperson of the Hospitality Membership Committee, and I'd like to thank Mechie for not only making the name tags for Kara and Nick. Hi, Nick. But also for some other recent new members, Estrella Donald. Are you here, Estrella? Or did she step out? Oh, she just stepped out. Okay. Sorry. And also Gary and Catherine Peterson. Maybe you could stand up and model your... They're really works of art. Thank you, Mechie.
Andrew and I have been arguing over who's going to stand up and say this. He said he can't play his trumpet if he does. But I want to honor my sweet dog that we said goodbye to this week.
I spent the week mostly with at a huge meeting, Society of Wetland Scientists, which is started out to be a U.S. organization, but now it's has chapters all over the world. So we had people from a delegation from Taiwan, some Chinese people, from people from all sorts of countries. It was a fantastic meeting. I heard all kinds of wonderful things. And an old Czech friend, an old friend, she's no, not old, that Rose and I became made friends with in Czechoslovakia in 1972. She and her husband escaped from the communist world in 1983, found jobs in the United States, and Eliska was here and spent an evening with us at home. It was a wonderful experience. The bad news is that there are some really, well, we heard about some bad things happening, such as the Lake Winnipeg is now become extremely eutrophic with massive algal blooms because of intensive agriculture in the watershed, much more intensive agriculture. There are quite a lot of stories like that we heard, in addition to a lot of positive news.
One more over there, and then we'll... Or two.
I'll be very brief. For those of you who didn't know, we did get the visa for our grandchild, and he may be here on Wednesday. It's been a cliffhanger, so don't hold your breath.
Well, a week ago, Joanne and I had a wonderful conference in Notre Dame. It's the first ever conference for starting and improving peace studies programs. And it was a wonderful conference, so a lot of wonderful participants. Probably our main concern would be that they're still stuck in the conflict resolution mode. And nobody spoke a word about economics or the military-industrial complex. And the idea, you know, that wars just kind of all spring up because of tensions and not are organized by people for New American Century and CSP and JINSA and other boards of defense contractors organized into these groups that gave us the Iraq War. Was absent from the conference. So in a question and answer towards the end of the conference, I gave them about a 7-minute speech and set the record straight.
Okay, thank you, everyone. We're now ready to move on with our program, which has been organized by Rose Smith, who is a librarian extraordinaire. This is going to be an interactive program, too, so people will be jumping up and down and also talking wildly about books they love.
Okay, now, this is the way it's going to work. I want everybody who has a book to talk about to raise your hands. And Galen and Anne will distribute index cards. Now, these index cards have one blank side, and the other side is our leftovers from library school. So they're going to distribute, just a minute, pens and cards to all of you
who need them.
Who need them. And at the end of the program, you're welcome to keep the pens, the prairie pens, but please to turn in the index cards. And Bob Park has very kindly offered, when requested, to compile the list
and distribute. The list in Prairie Fire. At the end of the program, we'll collect all the index cards, we'll collect the song sheets and the quotes for next year. So, while Galen and Anne are busy distributing cards and pens, I will take the liberty of talking about my book. The author of this book, Agata Nasala, is a friend of ours. She taught English and women's studies in Whitewater. Her first book was Woman in Amber. She came from Latvia. She spent some of her childhood in the Second World War, in a displaced persons camp, 5 years, I believe, and came to this country when she was 9. Woman in Amber was her memoir. In Love with Jerzy Kaczynski is a novel which uses some of the themes from Woman in Amber, but also she talks quite a bit about Jerzy Kaczynski, who also survived World War II years as a child. And he described the horrors in the painted... So I read Painted Bird. I do not recommend that. it was very painful reading about all of the things that if he didn't go through, he couldn't have made that stuff up. And so she has a great feeling of empathy with him because of their shared experiences. But it is also the journey of a woman toward wholeness and integrity. So I do recommend this book highly, In Love with Jerzy Kaczynski. And that will be on the list. So now, Galen, do you have one of those? Yeah. Galen will go around, and you'll have an opportunity then to talk about your own book. Why don't we start on that side of the room since that's where he is?
Well, I hadn't planned to be this soon because the book I'm bringing is not a book that maybe everyone is going to want to read for their own personal things. And I've not been into reading many books lately because I've been in grandmother mode. And the Maya Angelou statement about going back to your childhood is certainly fitting me right now. And I have a different kind of painted bird and a much different view. I have been reading The Royal Raven. And the reason I bought it, I got it at a secondhand store without any clue what was in it, was because of the cover, because I'm working on a homeschooling unit on bird watching, which will begin simply with going out with binoculars and watching anything we see. But it's just a charming book about a poor little raven. Well, it was with lots of ravens and wanted to be different, but he wanted to be different not according to his talents. He wanted to show off all the fancy clothes he had. And so to make it short, he ended up being the royal raven, being very unhappy, being mistreated, and decided it was better being back with the flock.
I wouldn't say this is exciting reading. It's the biography of Langston Hughes. But, and in fact, it's a little repetitious because it talks about various things that he wrote, various places he went, and so forth. But it's a very, very awakening story for me to feel what he felt as a black person in, like, the 20s and 30s. And the reason I decided to read it was because in a choral group I was in, we did a song, and they were his words. I want to just read to you this one bunch of phrases from him. He wrote very fine poetry. He also wrote poetry that had the colloquialisms of his group of people where he lived. It's, oops, that's the wrong page. These were the words that were to this song. He wrote a lot more than poetry. He wrote plays and even opera, a lot of words for music as well as wonderful stories. I dream a world where man, no other man will scorn, where love will bless the earth and peace its paths adorn. I dream a world where all will know sweet freedom's way, where greed no longer saps the soul nor avarice blights our day. A world I dream where black or white, whatever race you be, will share the bounties of the earth and every man is free. Her wretchedness will hang its head and joy like a pearl attend the needs of all mankind. Of such I dream our world. And I was so impressed with this and the beauty of the melody also. I recommend the choir ought to do it sometime. This is by Faith Berry. We did do it, did we? Oh, well, then I must have rung bells for me. A very, very good book, very enlightening.
I forgot to mention, when you're filling out your card, I hope you put on the top, whether it's fiction, F, or nonfiction, NF, put the title, the author, and if you can, the date. You don't have to do the publishing stuff. And then at the bottom, it would be nice if you put your own name so that we know who recommended the book. Thank you. The date of publication.
Who's next?
My book is by Madison author Ben Granby, who, a Madison native who spoke here at Prairie in 2003. Welcome to the Bethlehem Star Hotel, nonfiction, not available in the local library, from Garrett County Press. The subtitle is An Account of Life in Palestine with Description of People, Places, and Incidents. He's very good at putting into words descriptions of what he saw in Gaza and other parts of Palestine, and it fits in with the program in July that the Social Action Committee plans to do on Palestine.
My book is Your Inner Fish by Neil Shubin, who is a professor at UW-Madison. And, Chicago, I guess because we've heard him here several times. And it's about, he's a paleontologist, and it's about finding a transitory or transitional species called Tiktaalik, which is the first incidence of a body and, like creature with a body and wrists and bones that are more similar to creatures that came after it. And I also wanted to mention that I have a terrible memory, so I write every book that I read down. And I have a special place in my bookcase that I keep it because I don't remember otherwise. And my neighbor and I have shared a lot of reading, and the problem is I got her turned down to vocal music and opera, and she got me turned down to paranormal romances. Now I say, is that fair?
That's opera.
I might say that I do the same thing, and I keep my list in notebooks, and I'm up to number 7. Notebook.
Okay, I brought a second book because it's so closely related. But the first one, and I'll probably talk about this the most, is David Talbot's The Hidden History of the Kennedy Years Brothers. And it really talks about RFK, his reaction to the assassination. And it turns out he instantly realized who had probably done it. As subsequent researchers have pointed out, there was a combination of the mafia, the CIA, and the Cuban exiles, and the Cuban exile movement, in his own Operation Mongoose against Castro and everything. He knew that there was deep trouble in all those areas, and he instantly realized. But he sent back channel information to the Soviet Union. Don't worry, we know it's a domestic matter and you're not involved. So he has tried to assuage people overseas. And, of course, he had to be shot after that because he'd been elected president. All hell was broken loose with a real investigation. So, and the other one, James Douglas, JFK and the Unspeakable, Why He Died and Why It Matters. The first one was 2007. This is 2008. Douglas came here and spoke at Edgewood College, and he really lays it out. This is kind of the missing part, all the nuts and bolts and who did what and all that. That's been the story all these years. Now they're looking at the key figures and looking at the rationale and the reasoning. And there was a a fiction account, 7 Days in May, that came out in, I think it was about 61 or 62, where a president was deposed. And he thought that if you did two or three things, two things you might get away with, but the third you'd get, they'd come after you and get you, and that's Kennedy in his own words. And that would be, you know, the Bay of Pigs would be the first one, the Cuban Missile Crisis would be the second chance, you know, to go after Cuba that he turned down and saved all our lives because we avoided nuclear war. We would have had it with one of our conservative presidents in charge, probably. And most of us wouldn't be here. And the last one, according to James Douglas, he thinks that the last one was the test ban, so that they did not atmospheric test ban of nuclear weapons. I have my own ideas, but so that was one over the line, and according to Kennedy's own analysis, that the powers that be might come after him if he did that many incidents. That's just a small part of it, of course, but it gives you the thinking in brothers and here, you know, of other situation in those times, all the motivation, if you will, behind what happened in 1963.
Who has quote number one? Would you mind reading that, please?
Children are made readers on the laps of their parents. 1994, Emily Butler.
Thank you.
I'm reading a book, haven't finished it yet. It's called The Given Day by Dennis Lehane. It's a historical fiction centered back in the early 20th century in Boston. And it touches on the lives of two men, one black, one white, how they intermingle and yet how they stay separate. It portrays the struggle between capitalists and working men, and names who pop up are people like Woodrow Wilson, Mitchell Palmer, the early baby John Hoover, who became J. Edgar Hoover, Jack Reed, the social agitator, Babe Ruth, and a host of other people have very critical words for Calvin Coolidge, rightfully so. But the whole thing culminates in the Boston police strike in 1919, and how the powers to be use words like Bolshevik, communist, terrorist, and how they kind of used the terrorist threat. There were some terrorists running around, but they used that terrorist threat to try and stop the union people and people who were looking for a decent wage. Men who stood up for that could be beaten, shot, or imprisoned. It was interesting to read because as I read it, I kept saying, you know, when do we ever learn? I kept remembering the words from Pete Seeger's song, you know, where have all the flowers gone? But why do we keep recycling this stuff? And why is the class struggle keep going on? And I finally concluded, because it has to. But it's a good book. The Given Day by Dennis Lehane. It's a fiction, and I recommend it.
I recommend The Women by T.C. Boyle. This is the story of the women that were very important in Frank Lloyd Wright's life, starting with his mother. And I'm very interested in Frank Lloyd Wright and actually in all kinds of architectural history. And so I really enjoyed this. I also like T.C. Boyle very much as a writer.
My book is The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. If you've read Jonathan Livingston Seagull or The Little Prince, this is in that vein. It's someone, a shepherd in Spain, who is looking for something more in life and travels on these journeys. And as he goes through life, through the desert and different places, looking for the treasure, finds treasures in different places. So it's the first book of fiction I've read in quite a long time. I've been reading other things about child development, the brain, and things like this. So I thought, I've got to start going back to some fiction. This is the first book I picked up, and I really recommend it as something that you can read. It's a short one, but you can read, and it really does, I think, would resonate with most of the people here, looking for what is that that you're really looking for, and have you found it? It's The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. It's written in 1993 and it's supposed to have been printed many, many times around the world.
If you're interested in history and things that may have happened or not happened, I strongly recommend 1421, the year China discovered America, by Gavin Menzies. The guy was a British submarine commander, and I tell you, what he has discovered is just unbelievable, and I strongly recommend it. That's all I can say.
I recommend when you walk into a library to go over to the new book section, you know, where they have several out on display. I found some really good books that way, and I found the one I'll talk about this morning, The Last Witchfinder by James Morrow. It was written in 2007, I believe. And it's a story of a woman back in the 1600s, I think, or 17, I'm bad on dates, but anyway, at one point, she leaves England and goes back to, or not back, but she travels to Salem, Massachusetts, at right about the time when that was a hot spot. Her father is a witch finder, and she's getting away from him. James Morrow has quite a sense of humor, and even in sometimes the most harrowing of scenes, he'll come up with some phrase that just made me laugh out loud. There was one phrase where somebody was teaching someone else about female mission and male emission. The title of another one of his books is The First Begotten Daughter, which I'm looking to reading. Anyway, Isaac Newton is in this one. She has a long love affair with Ben Franklin. So this is historical fiction and perhaps even some fantasy. But ultimately, the whole thing is, and I was fascinated with this, it looks at the time when witches were believed in and the outrageous stuff that they believed about Satan and reality and so on, and how reason and science began supplanting that. And to me, that is just such a central time of human development. And so for that alone, it was fascinating, but it was great fun reading on top of it. The Last Witchfinder by James Morrow, M-O-R-R-O-W.
Who has number two? Please.
Jorge Luis Borges said, "I have always imagined that paradise would be a kind of library."
I'd love to follow up that quote. This past year, we have started reading aloud, or past 2 years, I guess, reading aloud as a family. And we have shared so many joyous books. I'm really glad I didn't know about this the day before, because I would have been up all night. We're excited about so many things we're reading. But one of the highlights for us is a fabulous book called Life is Good, which is written by an African-American gentleman who I think is now 103. He went back to school at 93 and learned how to read. And it chronicles his life as a direct descendant of slaves. And life is good. I mean, that's the story. It's a really beautiful story. It's a little disturbing for very young children. So if you pre-read the book and take out parts, lynchings and things like that, that aren't so appropriate for really younger readers. But reading it ahead and then reading it aloud is really a joyous experience. So
first thing I want to make is a suggestion of how to keep your list of books. There's a website, and I put it on my card, called goodreads.com, and you can enter the books you read with a short review or a long review. It all just goes off into cyberspace. And you can also put in books that you want to read that other people have recommended to you. I looked over my last year's list, and I saw quite a few that I'd like to talk about, but I won't. A couple of them are probably on bestseller lists. One was Run by Ann Patchett, who also wrote Bel Canto, one of my favorite books, but I'm not going to tell you about that. And the other one is Water for Elephants, which is also a very popular bestseller. But this is one you might not have run into. It's called The Uncommon Reader, and it's by Alan Bennett. And it's a delightful half-fiction but could almost be real story about Queen Elizabeth. She was wandering through the courtyard when a lending library book van happened to be in the courtyard, and a scullery boy from the kitchen was getting a book. And she said, "This looks interesting. I wonder if I could get a book." And so he recommended a book to her, and she took it. And she kind of suspected her entourage would not be too happy with this, so she sort of sequestered it and read it in her spare time. Struggled. It was some rather dense Victorian novel, but she worked on it. And then she went for more suggestions. And anyway, she ended up being an addicted reader. And eventually it was discovered they'd find books hidden in the cushions of her coach. But the advisors tried to squelch this. They sent the scullery boy off to got him a scholarship and sent him off to a university to get rid of him. And then she decided it wasn't enough to read. She wanted to write. Now, this was really the last straw. I won't tell you how it all turns out, but it's a short book. You could read it in an evening, and it's absolutely delightful. We've been requested to, when you do your book, tell us who you are.
Tell us the what?
Your name.
Oh, well, I'm John Franz, and my book is called Dependent Son, and it's 15 years old or so, by Stephen Jay Gould, a paleontologist and biologist. And it's a number of interesting stories that are independent of each other. The panda's thumb is interesting biologically because the panda has five other fingers that are all more or less equal, and evolution couldn't create a thumb from those. The panda's thumb is a sixth item on the hand, but it's not really a finger. It's just a flexible bone in the wrist that has a callus over it, and the panda needed it for peeling leaves off the the bamboo shoots that it eats. And it's a good illustration about how evolution has to start with something that already exists.
Now, the book that I found was something that the title of it just absolutely caught my eye in the library. It's called Grand Theft Jesus, The Hijacking of Religion in America. And it was really fascinating because...
this elevator that's going into space and accelerating all of the time. These are the kinds of things that Einstein actually put in those famous papers. And one of the things that I really enjoy on this is the connections that Isaacson has found in the Caltech archives of Einstein's papers that were finally released in 2006 for researchers to get into. The letters, the comments, the incredible literary skill that Einstein had, the philosophies that he followed, the logical positivism. He was an advocate of David Hume as a philosopher. His pacifism, his non-pacifism later, he was really upset by Nazi Germany. His writing a letter to Roosevelt, suggesting that based upon the theories of E equal MC squared, it might be possible to do something like create an atomic bomb. And then his incredible sorrow at it actually having been created and used, and his attempts to influence the debate about whether we should do that or not. Walter Isaacson writes like a novelist, and I highly recommend Einstein, His Life and Universe. 2008.
Oh, okay. I'm Ruth Calden, and the book is one that I have a personal history with. It's called The Journals of Dorothy Wordsworth. And a number of years ago, George and I were in England in Grasmere in the Lake Country and went to Dove Cottage where Dorothy Wordsworth lived with her brother, William. And it's just a delightful book. Coleridge called her the exquisite sister of William Wordsworth. And it's not a page-turner. It's a type of book that you want to read a few pages at night and achieve this peaceful state and fall asleep. For example, here she describes, this is 1798, the shapes of the mist slowly moving along, exquisitely beautiful, passing over the sheep. They almost seem to have more of life than those quiet creatures. The unseen birds singing in the midst. And she and her brother take walks every day, read Shakespeare, Spencer to each other, make bread. It's just really quite lovely. And it says here, she wrote as she lived in a way that was natural to her. That is why we listen to what she tells us as we might listen to a thrush singing. Anyway, and this is an addition by Mary Moorman, because there were more of her diaries found and so on. And there are also 33 poems by William Wordsworth in the back, which are referred to in the journals.
I'm sorry. Who has number three?
I am number three, actually.
Where is human nature so weak as in the bookstore? Henry Ward Beecher.
I'm standing here, I'm Arin Schroeder, and I'm standing here today with something I don't think you'll ever see me with again, probably. It's an overdue library book. I got up early this morning so I could read it and return it, but I brought it this morning to show to Eileen, actually, because it's set in Seattle. It's called Hotel on the Corner of Bitter and Sweet, and it talks about the Japanese internment during World War II, and it really gives you a sense of what that was like. I also recently read the Jersey Literary and Potato Peel Society, which gives you an impression of what it was like on the occupied island of Jersey in England during World War II. But neither of those is the book that I'm recommending this morning, although they're both quite good. I recently read a Wisconsin author, Michael Perry, who is known for his original book, which was Population 485, about being in the volunteer fire department in New Auburn, Wisconsin. But his latest book is called Coop, as in chicken coop. And the subtitle is A Year of Poultry, Parenting, and Something Else That Begins with a P. Anybody else read the book? And it's set in Wisconsin, and it's about his welcoming his first biological child into a family that already has a stepchild, and setting up a farm, and building a chicken coop. And it's such a heartwarming book. I really highly recommend it.
Well, I'm Kara Affs, and I made it through The Pillars of the Earth by Ken Follett probably a couple weeks ago, and I really enjoyed it, and that's why I want to recommend it today. It's definitely fiction. Well, I assume. I don't think anybody really chronicled stuff like this back then. But it follows at least three main characters through the course of the 12th century. So it's very much you dive into this world that you're not really, I mean, it's so different than, you know, things are today, and to go through, and it really gives you a sense of what life was like back then, and I thought that was really interesting if you're into the kind of medieval historical fiction kind of thing. I recommend it if you've got some time.
Was that Pillars of the Earth?
Yes.
Yeah.
Pillars of the Earth.
I'm Nick Apps, and I brought something that's a little bit on the lighter side. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Christopher Moore, but the book is Lamb, and the subtitle is The Gospel According to Biff, Christ's Childhood Pal. So it's a work of significant historical fiction, but it's designed, it takes place during the years that are conveniently left out of the Bible. Jesus, his youth, up until being a young man, in his search for meaning and where his place is in the world and in history, and Biff acts as a foil for him. I guess one memorable exchange is where a young woman suggests that all men are liars, and Jesus says, well, the superior man, according to Confucius, never acts without virtue. Even for the space of a single meal. And Biff says, well, that's all well and good for the superior man, but the rest of us need to get laid somehow. So, but Christopher Moore is really funny, and I would recommend it. It's a fast read, and it's really enjoyable. Christopher Moore, the book is Lamb.
I'm Jean Matos, and first of all, I'd like to say something about a book which was everybody's favorite last year, the number one women's detective agency, has now been made by HBO into a TV series, which is just beautifully, beautifully done. If you get a chance to see it, it's worth it. My book is The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society, which was one of my airport grabs. When I'm going on a trip, I like to relax by going into the airport bookstore or newsstand and finding a good book to read on the plane. I actually found three this time, but I got to Madison and everybody said, oh, you're reading Guernsey Potato Peel Pie book, and I thought, wow, I really lucked out this time. It's a light story, but the most interesting part of it is the first of all, who knew where the Channel Islands were in the first place? They're islands between the coast of France and the coast of England. And secondly, who realized that they were totally occupied by the Nazis during World War II? So it's a bit of history as well as a good read.
Well, there was a series on public television about one of the Channel Islands during the occupation. It was fascinating. I can't remember the title of that series. Pardon? Can't remember.
Next.
My name is Kim Truog. I didn't really come prepared, but I thought of a couple books that I enjoyed reading, and they're kind of light reads. And they're first one is Girlfriend's Guide to the First Year of Motherhood. I read that first year shortly after having Samantha, and it's been a while, so, but basically it's humorous about dealing with the first year of motherhood and adjusting, and it was very helpful. And the thing I kind of got out of that, and it does give some good sound advice, was, you know, just kind of how you can, working with other mothers, how that can really help you through, and how that's kind of a key component. And then, for me anyway, and then the other one is Loving and Loathing Our Inner Housewife, and it's kind of self-explanatory. It's a humorous, she lady does it rather humorously, but I'm kind of, I guess what struck me was I'm kind of on the cusp of, well, I'm a stay-at-home mom, but yet on the cusp of the feminist movement and my mother's traditional movement, where I was raised with four brothers and lived on a dairy farm, and I had to stay inside and do the dusting. But ironically, we listened to Helen Ruddy saying, "I am woman, hear me roar," and it's rather kind of confusing. And to try to put, she kind of puts in this book, she kind of puts in perspective some of those things, you know, where her mother was brought up being a housewife and doing all those duties regarding to that, and the craft of handmanship, or whatever you want to call it, of housework, and then her mother moving out into the working world, and just kind of that transitional thing, and how appreciating some of that, yet, and appreciating the new, and just kind of blending it somehow. That, but it was good. So I mean, it's a little hard to explain, but I enjoyed it.
I'm Heidi Hughes. My favorite book this year, one of the ones that I read, was Animal Vegetable Miracle by Barbara Kingsolver. And she's usually a fiction writer, and she wrote, it's a nonfiction book, how she takes her family through this journey for a year of growing everything that they eat, or if they can't grow it, they get it locally. And I just thought it kind of changed how I thought about things, and I just thought it was really well written, and the story was really good. And it was very inspiring to read it and how she did that. And she made me want to grow asparagus, so I did.
We have a food theme in the back row. I'm Elizabeth Macassite. I just wanted to put in a little plug for the book club thing that we're doing, I think, August 2nd, which is The Omnivore's Dilemma. I started reading that. There's like a month left to read it. Anyway, I'm really enjoying it. I've been really interested in like whole foods and organic foods and local farms for a long time, but I think it remains somewhat hidden what the conventional people are doing. And I don't think I really fully understood how that works and how much it had changed in the last 40 years from how things had worked for the many years before that. So I really recommend it. I think I really feel like it's an education that we should really know where this is, where our food's coming from. So,
hello, I'm Strea Donald. So I think my choice of reading is probably the far-fetched one. I do like the paranormal books. speaking of True Blood and HBO and stuff, I love those novels. But for educational purposes, I do read things for my children as well. And I think this book I share with my sister because this is a man that's not pro nor against vaccines, but I think this is something that is I'm learning about every day. And being that I'm a mom of three children, I, you know, take my children as my whole world. So these things are really important to me, and I think this is something that I'm starting to get really strong feelings about, are the vaccinations and whatnot. So this is a good read for maybe grandparents or parents-to-be. It's called The Vaccine Book by Dr. Sears, Robert Sears. So, yeah.
Anybody else? Okay. I have a quick one myself. So.
My book is Genghis Khan and the Making of the Modern World by Jack Weatherford. There's so many stories about and myths about Genghis Khan, and I think the Western world was influenced. Our feudal society, was broken up a great deal by Genghis Khan because he was against the inheritance of power. He appreciated talent. He was a genius in organization. And up to the time of Lenin, Lenin so feared any relative of Genghis Khan, he had a genocide. He went to Mongolia, the men, women, and children who could have been related to him. There was a movie at Sundance, but it was very poor. All it did is show his beginning of his life as a child. It didn't show his true organization or genius and how it influenced the Middle East and Europe, and especially also in Kosovo and, you know, Yugoslavian area. Also, the next book went along with it, Lords of the Horizon, the History of the Ottoman Empire. And that went into what I just mentioned, the after the Mongol, then the Turks, and not just the Turks, but Janissaries. Many young children from Europe who were enslaved, brought up as Muslims, and became leaders. And many of the leaders throughout the Middle East and even in Spain were influenced or were Europeans. So, and that was by Jason Goodwin.
Who has number four?
Ah. The greatest gift is the passion for reading. It is cheap, it controls, it distracts, it excites. It gives you knowledge of the world and experience of a lifetime. It is the moral illumination. Elizabeth Hope.
I have, very quickly, this is a follow-up on a book by Barbara Kingsolver and Michael Pollan's book. This is a more recent book that Michael Pollan, the most recent book that Michael has written, published last year. It's called In Defense of Food, and I think everybody should read this before that. We have a program here at Prairie later this. Remember when it's coming up exactly? About Michael Pollan. What? August. Yeah, pretty soon. So this is a supplement to Michael Pollan's big book, and in which he goes more deeply into the reasons for some of the reasons, especially nutritional facts. Facts in fiction and errors by the nutritionists over the years. And he gives you very, very practical advice as to just what to eat. And I'm going to read you one very short quote, which is the first sentence in the book, which is, sorry, open here. Incidentally, the subtitle of this In Defense of Food is called An Eater's Manifesto. It's very practical advice. And his first sentence is his bottom line: eat food, not too much, mostly plants. Being a botanist, I think this is great.
I have waited to see if anybody else was going to talk about this book, which I just adore. How can you look at that picture of this beautiful kitty and not love it? Dewey, the small town library cat who touched the world. And it's also the story of the librarians who found this darling little kitty in the book drop on the coldest day of the year. And when they found him, he was gray. So they gave him a bath, and he turned out to be orange. But it is incredible, this little cat. She describes him as when they bathed him and fed him, he purred and looked up at all of them as if he was thanking each one. And he became just the drawing point of this little library. And he seemed to know who needed the most attention. So there were children who were autistic. There were people with health problems. And he would go over and sit on their laps and purr. And there, I mean, this cat became famous. And I am, I listened to the Ideas Network when Vicki Myron, who wrote this book with the help of Brett Witter, was being interviewed by Gene Faraca, and apparently there's going to be a movie. So that'll be fun. But I just had to tell you about this darling cat, and oh, I would love to have one, but my significant other is not thrilled.
I think we better stop now. Thank you so much, Rosemith.
Okay, now let's do the offertory.
All right.
Is that a cat biography?
Well, it's really the story of the librarian and the cat and the people. It's wonderful. Very well. Pardon? It's a true story. Oh, yes. Indeed.
Prairie runs on love, but we also need your monetary support. We invite you now to share your gifts and offerings as the ushers pass the baskets. Please hand your basket to the ushers rather than passing it behind yourself. And today we have a wonderful treat, and we have a duet by Marsha Johnson and Andy Summers, Danny Boy.
You go that way, and you go that way.
Thank you, Marsha and Andy. Now is the time for us to welcome guests and visitors. If you are here for the first or second time or haven't attended for a while, we invite you to introduce yourself and say what brought you here. Is there anybody that fits that category? I guess not. Prairie announcement time. Please take the time to read the announcements on the order of service. Are there any additional brief Prairie announcements?
Just want to make sure that everybody stays for cake and coffee afterwards for Nick and Kara in celebration of their future baby here, who is with us, just not quite out yet to see.
Anybody else?
these two bouquets of, I don't know if they're fleabane or asters or exactly what they are. They're for somebody to take home. I think maybe one of them is taken. I'm not quite sure. A daisy fleabane, yeah. So please help yourself.
Just a couple quick notes on the calendar. July, things are coming together for July. On the 12th, Art Sigoni is going to be here presenting sort of a circle, Native American circle experience. And then on the 19th, Social Action Committee is going to present a program on Palestine with some readings from a play. And then that will be, no.
Not
reading. There will actually be a performance. I'm sorry. Okay, there's going to be a speaker. Sorry. And then you can stay tuned for the next weekend for a performance. So next Sunday. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Eileen. And the next Sunday, it mentions that Reverend Jane Espenson is going to present One Heart is Enough. One's Heart is Enough. Just for those of you who don't know, she is a UU minister. So.
Sandy, do you want to tell us about the artwork? Well, today we have Bev Park and Mary Summers work up here.
Hello.
Oh. Where do you, just put it close to you.
Okay. Today we have Bev Park and Mary Summers work.
Barb.
I'm sorry. and I put a couple things up there too, and anyone interested in showing their artwork, please come tell us, and we would like to put up our local talent here at Prairie. Who are the two on the side? Isn't that Mechie? Oh.
Had here before, and I just brought them to fill in. Now, the next hymn that we're going to sing, you have handouts. Yes.
Robin Proud helped me change the words from how can I keep from singing to how can I keep from reading. So I hope that you all have the handouts and so now Mary will play it.
On in endless words of a first lamentation, I hear the real but far off hymn that hails a new creation. Through all the tumult and the strife, I see those words I'm needing. I know the truth, it liveth. seer and see their death wounds bleeding. When friends rejoice both far and near, how can I keep from reading? In prison cell and dungeon vile, our thoughts to them are speeding. When friends by shame are undefiled, how can I keep from reading? I lift my eyes, the cloud grows dim. I see the blue above it, and day by day this pathway clears, since I first learned.
I want to thank everybody who helped and participated in this program. That includes everybody here. And also, I'm going to put this basket on this chair, and would you please put your cards in it and leave, and we need to collect all the song sheets and the quotes to use next year. Now the closing words. Books to the ceiling, books to the sky. My piles of books are a mile high. How I love them, how I need them. I'll have a long beard by the time I read them.
Go in peace to love the world and read.